Shri Shugo, I'll read the second verse here, and then we'll go on to the word-by-word synonyms. Pratyuta Sangyamal Rajanam Karta Yat Palakasutaha Vishakyayu Pastat Putro Vavatara Jakastataha. Shri Shukuvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said. Yaha. Who? Anchaha. The final member of the lineage described in the ninth canto. Puranjayaha. Puranjaya. Ripunjaya. That's another name of Puranjaya. Nama. Named. Bhavishyaha. Will live in the future. Varahadrataha. The descendant of Brihadrata. Tasha. His. Amatyaha. Minister. To, but, Shunakaha, Shunaka, Hatva, killing, Swaminam, his master, Atmajam, his own son, Pradyota Sangyam, Pradyota, actually. Technically in Sanskrit, that would mean known as Prajyota. Rajanam, the king. Karta, will make. Yat, whose? Palakaha, name Palaka. Sutaha, the son. Vishakya. Yani Vishaka Yupaha. Vishaka Yupa. Tatputraha. The son of Palaka. Bhavata. Will be. Rajakaha. Rajaka. Tataha. Then. Coming as the son of Vishaka Yupa. The translation, Shukadeva Goswami said the last king mentioned in our previous enumeration of the future rulers of the Magadha dynasty was Puranjaya, who will take birth as the descendant of Brihadrata. Puranjaya's minister, Shunaka, will assassinate the king and install his own son, Pradyota, on the throne. The son of Pradyota will be Palaka, and his son will be Vishakhayupa. And his son will be Rajaka. Okay, let's go on to the purport. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The vicious political intrigue described here is systematic of the age of Kali. In the ninth canto of this work, Shukadeva Goswami describes how the great rulers and men descended from two royal dynasties, that of the sun and that of the moon. The ninth canto's description of Lord Ramachandra, a most famous incarnation of God, occurs in this genealogical narration. And at the end of the ninth canto, Shukadeva describes the forefathers of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Finally, the appearance of Lord Krishna and that of Lord Balaram are mentioned within the context of the narration of the Moon Dynasty. The tenth canto is devoted exclusively to a description of Lord Krishna's childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, his teenage activities in Mathura, and his adult activities in Dwaraka. The famous epic Mahabharata also describes the events of this period, focusing upon the five Pandava brothers and their activities in relation with Lord Krishna and other leading historical figures such as Bhishma, Dhritarashtra, Dronacharya, and Vidura. Within the Mahabharata is Bhagavad Gita, in which Lord Krishna is declared to be the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, of which we are presently translating the 12th and final canto, is considered a more advanced literature than the Mahabharata because throughout the entire work, Lord Sri Krishna, the absolute truth and supreme source of all existence, is directly, centrally, and irrefutably revealed. In fact, the first canto of the Bhagavatam describes how Sri Vyasadeva composed this great work because he was dissatisfied with his rather sporadic glorification of Lord Krishna in the Mahabharata. Although Srimad Bhagavatam narrates the histories of many royal dynasties and the lives of innumerable kings, not until the description of the present age, the age of Kali, do we find a minister assassinating his own king and installing his son on the throne. This incident resembles Dhritarashtra's attempt to assassinate the Pandavas and crown his son, Duryodhana, king. As the Mahabharata describes, Lord Krishna thwarted this attempt, but with the departure of the Lord for the spiritual sky, the age of Kali became fully manifested, ushering in political assassination within one's own house as a standard technique. That's interesting. It's a standard technique. That's quite an interesting description given. So, there's a picture of Prabhupada. Hopefully there's a picture of Prabhupada here. Anyway. So, Om Maganath Timadanda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshurim Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. These types of political intrigue amongst the kingly class are due to the non-institution or the lack of the institution of Varnashram. Because Varnashram is a system of checks and balances. I mean, it's a very complex system. Sometimes people describe Varnashram just meaning farming. That's part of Varnashram. And sometimes people describe Varnashram being cow protection. That's part of Varnashram, an important part of Varnashram. But the essential part of Varnashram as far as ruling a society is the checks and balances between the different classes. And specifically, the Brahminical class. How the Brahminical class checks the activities of the other classes. For example, you have the story previously in Srimad Bhagavatam of King Vena. Actually, his father's name was Anga. Anga, Maharaj. He had a very cruel son. His name was Vena, and I think most of you know that story. Vena used to kill his friends when he went out to play with them. Like his mother would say, you know, my dear son, Vena, where are your friends? And Vena would say, I killed them all, Mom. And so the mother, being the daughter of fear or death personified or whatever, that's described, she sort of had the same qualities as her father, and the son had the same qualities as his mother. So this is a standard thing that occurs. The daughter has the same qualities as the father, and the son has the same qualities as the mother. And there's some exceptions, but this is the general principle. Prabhupada spoke about this. So Vena had his mother's qualities, and his father, of course, was a great devotee. And his father, instead of trying to make some arrangement, you know, sending Vena to finishing school or something, he took it as an opportunity to head for the hills. Because as Chanaka Pandit says, Aranyatena gantavyam yatagraham. And he says, if your wife doesn't speak pleasingly, don't listen to this. If your wife doesn't speak pleasingly, then head for the hills. That's the same, that Chanaka Pandit says. Aranyatena gantavyam. Because he says, Aranyatena gantavyam yatagraham. Tagraham, because your house is already like the forest. That's it. Yata, Aranyam. Aranyam means forest. So your griha is already like the forest. So why not take advantage of a garden of the forest and becoming detached from this material world. Of course, that's not an injunction to anybody in this world, any of the devotees. So, but the point is, if you have a son like Vena, then like King Anga, he took it as an opportunity. Just like people say, there are no problems in this world. There are only challenges and opportunities, right? It's nice. It's a nice way to look at things. Because if you take things as problems, you simply get depressed. For example, old age, which we are presently enjoying, like the creaks and the groans and the whatever happens in the body. It's, oh, it's a problem. My eyesight is not as strong as it was before. I have some back problems. I have some stomach problems. I have some knee problems. And then you, what is it? Nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Nobody knows the sorrows. You know, that nice song we learned. That's a song. You should learn that song. So that's one way to take it. But another way is, hey, Krishna's teaching me something. What am I supposed to do about it? And what am I supposed to think about it? It's an opportunity. Haribol, old age. You take it like that. That's actually a devotee. Well, like, what do they say? When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Because there was one devotee I was explaining that to. You know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. He said, yes, when the going gets tough, I'm going to get going. In other words, leave. But the test, like Prabhupada, he had heart attacks on the boat coming over. And he didn't say, well, let's just forget it. You know, I'm back to Vrindavan for me. He just like became more determined. You know, so we have to see that whatever happens to us in this material world is actually Krishna's arrangement to help us. And we have to react in such a way that helps our Krishna consciousness. And so this Anga Maharaj, he did the same thing. He just said, well, this is a horrible son. And then he thought for a second, but he's a fantastic son. Because now he gives me an excuse. I'm out of here. So, it's a true story. I mean, this is from the Bhagavatam. We're not making this up. And so he headed for the hills. And then Vena was left as the king. That's called primogeniture. That means the first son. He was the only son, of course. The first son born usually takes over the kingdom. Just like you have that story in the Mahabharata. You had Kunti, who gave birth before Gandhari. Gandhari was pregnant for like a long period of time, like 2 years or something like that. And Kunti gave birth, but she had a pretty short pregnancy. It was just like she called for Yamaraj to come. You know that story? And Yamaraj said, all right, here's a kid. So that was kind of frustrating for Gandhari. And she ended up punching her stomach and gave birth to flesh that was later on divided into 101 pieces, because there was a daughter too. And so, because she understood that her son would not become the next king, it would be Kunti's son, which was Yudhisthira. Actually, Kunti's first son was Karna, but that was not revealed until later. That's one of the heart-wrenching stories in the Mahabharata, isn't it? That the Pandavas find out that they killed their brother, which is horrible. So that's primogeniture, the law of primogeniture. So Vena took over, and he was a horrible king. He was torturing the Brahmana. He was declaring himself to be God. He said, I am God. And you actually see this in certain countries today, basically, and in Korea, isn't it? Where there's no Brahminical class there. I mean, everybody's basically a Shudra. And there's a dynasty of less than human beings who are in charge of the country, and they're torturing people. They're living like pigs themselves. Sometimes they even look like pigs, isn't it? Overweight, look like pigs. And they're torturing the poor people in North Korea. And You know, if they have any opposition, they kill, just like described here. He kills his uncle, he kills his aunt, right? You read about this in the news. I mean, just like everybody in his family, anybody who even says boo to him gets killed. You know, and it's like the dynasty, the Kim Jong-soon dynasty, you know, whatever it is. I don't think it came from the moon god or the sun god or anything like that. In Japan, they actually had dynasties that were supposed to come from different demigods, which is interesting. So, because they have no Brahmins there, there were no checks, there's no checks and balances. And even if they had Brahmins, they would just be Kali Yuga Brahmins. And the Kali Yuga Brahmins are like the pandas in the holy places who want to take money to bless you. Just like you go to a holy place now, and, for example, around the Manasa Ganga. And I tell the devotees when I'm taking them on a tour, run through this place. Because if you don't run through this place, the pandas are going to grab onto your saris, ladies. They do that. And they just harass you. Just like I said, offer your obeisances before. This is actually the Bhajan Kutir of Sanatana Goswami at the Manasa Ganga. Anyone's been there? Some of you might have been there. And I say, offer your obeisances before we get there. Not when you get there. Because you're literally going to be attacked in the city. Run! Like that. So, you know, the Brahmanas and Kali Yuga, they are like, well, these are Brajavasis, I don't want to criticize them, but this is like the Brahmanas and Kali Yuga. They're also great devotees of the Lord, because they live in Vrindavan. But that's one of the qualities of the Brahmanas and Kali Yuga. So in the case of Vena, the Brahmanas decided to get rid of him. And they just chanted a mantra. They didn't get rid of him by planning an improvised explosive device, IED. They just chanted a mantra. The Brahmins were very powerful in those days. They just went, Mrityu, Venu, Vena, boom, and he died. And the Brahmins, they, because of the differentiation between the Varnas, they didn't take over the kingdom. What they did is they made arrangement for a proper king to take place. And the way they made the arrangement, because there were no descendants in this particular dynasty, is that they did some genetic engineering, which they were able to do in those days. How did they do that? They took the genes. Imagine gene splicing, genetic engineering, test tube babies. You know, we're so proud that we're able to do these things nowadays. But they took the genes, it's described, they churn the body. Which means they genetically, I mean that's a fancy term for genetically taking the genes, and first they took out all the bad genes. They spliced the bad genes out. And who came out but Bahuka, which basically means sit down, behave yourself, you know, shudras. Bahuka came out, shudra. So nothing wrong with shudras. They're meant to serve. But there has to be the higher caste in order to control them. Otherwise, if you give the shudras money, you give the shudras anything, they'll just go wild. They'll stand in line waiting for an iPhone for 3 days, the latest iPhone for 3 days. Can you imagine that? You know, latest iPhone, iPhone 6, 7, whatever it is. And they just stand with bated breath outside of the Apple store for 3 or 4 days, just camping out. You know, and this is Hare Krishna, you know, what are they thinking of? This is, because the shudra's quality is, first of all, Prabhupada said, shudra means lament. It means hankering, lamentation. Shochiti, kongshiti. Those are the qualities of a shudra. He's always hankering for something and lamenting he didn't get it. I need it, I need it, I need it. I need this. You know, and always lamenting, oh, why didn't I get it? I don't have enough money to buy the iPhone 6 or this or that. Yeah, that's shudra. It's just instantaneous gratification, likes to sleep a lot, likes to enjoy gross sense gratification. So, anyway, so getting back to the story. Vena, the Brahmanas, they killed Vena. And they got the shudra part out. And when they got rid of the bad genes, then they spliced some more genes together. And out came Prithu Maharaj and Archie. Actually, the incarnation of God. That'd be pretty good in genetic engineering to come up with an incarnation of God, wouldn't it? Let the scientists try that one. You know, they may be able to do test tube babies or come up with dinosaurs from the past, you know, take some of the genetic material and implant it within a... They're actually trying to do that. They have these mammoths, you know, these big, big predecessors to the elephants, you know, mammoths. And then they take their genes and they're planting them within elephant eggs and let the elephants give birth to a mammoth. Now, they may be able to do that. They're not creating life. That's another problem that people talk about. That oh, they say, we're creating life. They're not creating life. They're just taking the materials that are already alive. Just like the other day, the scientists had an advertisement or a news article that they've come up with a hamburger without a cow. Maybe you read about that. Yeah. In the laboratory, they grew a hamburger. So, you know, of course the vegetarians are thinking, Haribo, now we won't have, not Haribo, but anyway, now we won't have to kill cows and we can eat meat. But, so the scientists say, you know, we created this. They didn't create it. They took the genetic material from a cow and grew it. It's not life comes from life. Life never comes from matter. It's not that they could take carbon and the other elements, oxygen, and then just combine them together in some primordial soup and come up with life. It's just they take, you know, they take a gene out of your body and then grow some things from, not a gene, a cell, out of your body and grow some things from the cell. So what? Like Prabhupada said, gave the example of a dog. There's so many dogs that are barking, nobody pays much attention. But if a man starts barking, then they go to see him. You know, they'll pay to see a man who barks like a dog. But or people already having so many children, you know, if they can have one test tube baby by taking genetic material out, then everybody will think it's so wonderful. Things that are already going on. It's crazy. So anyway, so the brahmanas were able to produce a new king and queen, too, at the same time, which is really nice. So these are really good brahmanas, not Kali Yuga brahmanas, who are not able to do anything, basically. And a Kali Yuga brahmana means, basically, not only one who's not powerful, but one who doesn't have brahminical qualities. For example, and one can lose brahminical qualities. A brahmana can lose brahminical qualities by doing impure things. Like we have the story of Dronacharya and also Kripacharya. I mean, they were actually brahmanas. Dronacharya, for example, was a good brahmana. But he was lamenting the fact, and this is actually a Shudra quality, he was lamenting the fact that he wasn't able to give milk to his son. His son's name was Ashwatthama. And Ashwatthama's friends would sometimes mix chalk or some white substance with water and give it to him and then laugh at him. So because Dronacharya was lamenting like that and so attached to his son, this is one of the main points in the Mahabharata too, that he was extremely attached to Ashwatthama. So much attached to Ashwatthama that at the end, when he heard that Ashwatthama was dead, when Ashwatthama wasn't actually dead, he just like stopped fighting and voluntarily let himself be killed. So, in other words, he showed qualities that were not brahminical qualities. And one of the main things that occurred in the beginning of the whole story of Mahabharata is that he took employment under the Kurus so he could get what he wanted. Not only could he get what he wanted in terms of milk for his kid, you know, more facility, more food, but he wanted to get even with his friend Drupada, right? Everybody knows that story? Drupada was his childhood friend. And when they went to Gurukul together, Drupada promised that, you know, whatever I have, I'll give you, you know, we can share and share alike. So Dronacharya at one point went to Drupada and said, hey, remember me? I'm your old buddy. And Drupada said, what do you mean, Brahmana? Who are you? You know, whatever we did in our childhood is not important anyway. You know, just get out of here. I'll give you a cow if you want. Get the hell out of here. And Drona became so angry that, and this is another point, that's not a quality of a Brahmana. If a Brahmana is insulted, he turns the other cheek. Samo Dhamma, right? He's equipoise, Dhamma. He's self-controlled. Kapha, Shocha, he's clean. All these qualities listed in the Bhagavad Gita. So Dronacharya took a vow that I'm going to conquer over you. And so one of the reasons he took employment under the Kuru dynasty was not only the money and the facility he got, was so that he could employ the Pandavas. First he tried to employ the Kurus. The Kurus were unable to do it. You know, Duryodhana and company were unable to do it. But he employed the Pandavas in capturing Drupada and making Drupada apologize to him and making Drupada give him half of his kingdom, getting even, you know, vengeance. So here's an example of a Brahmana that really didn't act as a Brahmana. And later on, when there was the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, what did he do? He just sat there like a lump on the log. I mean, he didn't like what was happening. At least that was one good quality. But he didn't try to stop it. Even one of Dhritarashtra's own sons tried to stop it. That was Bhikarna. He was the only good guy amongst the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, Bhikarna. He tried to stop it. But Dronacharya didn't do a damn thing. Neither did Kripacharya, who was sitting there, watching. Can you imagine? You know, you're sitting in the palace, you're a Brahmin, supposed to be advising the king, and then they try to strip the princess naked, and you just sit there and you say, well, I don't like what's happening, but, you know, I can't say anything. You know, that is the disintegration of the whole Varnashram system when you lose the Brahmanas like that. Because when you have the Brahmanas can tell people what to do. The king is supposed to be subservient to the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas can tell the Vaishyas what to do. The Brahmanas can tell the Shudras. Well, of course, they don't directly guide the Shudras. The Shudras are directly guided by the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas, who are also Dvija or twice born. But you got to have a head. Prabhupada would stress that, you know, that's the head is the most important part of the body. Of course, every part of the body is important. You know, the arms are important. Nobody's denying that. Stomach is important. Nobody's denying that. But if you cut off the head, that the person's finished. Just like there was this... That's actually a funny story. From the Ramayana, there's this one demon, Kabanda, who was just a head and a mouth. You know that story? And long arms. He had long arms, actually. He 8 miles long. And he grabbed Ram and Lakshman, and he was getting ready to eat them, and they cut off his arms and burnt him. And he was actually a good guy, but he got cursed for taunting or making fun of a sage. So the head of society has to be there. That's why Prabhupada very much stressed developing brahmanas, but brahmanas who are not Kali Yuga brahmanas. What's it saying? Later on in this Bhagavatam it says, people will think that someone's become a brahmana or religion by a change of dress. You know, you put on, in the Christian religion, you put on one of these collars, or in Muslim religion, you put on whatever robes they wear. In the Hare Krishna religion, you put on the sannyasi robes. It's like Prabhupada said when he was young, he had a neighbor who had dressed as a sannyasi during the day to collect money, and at night he was a grihastha. He would go out, you know, with his bahir ras, that is the cape of the sannyasi, and he would collect bhiksha, you know, and then come home and then he'd empty it out and give it all to his wife. Then he put on the white dhoti at night. Actually, when I first took sannyas, I was informed that this cape that we wear is actually to protect you from women. You know, we had some crazy philosophies in the early days of the movement. It doesn't provide much protection. You can say it's like...
You hold it up,
it's like the cape of a matador. Olay, olay. I thought I was informed like that. I said, you know, just can't see it now. Anyway, so... But actually, the meaning is to collect alms. That's what the cape is for. It's called Tridandi Bhikshu. That means someone who carries a danda and collects alms. So Prabhupada's neighbor was a Kali Yuga sannyasi. He wasn't a sannyasi. And there's another story in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. There was like a householder sannyasi. And he turned out to be a shakta. He offered Lord Chaitanya liquor to drink. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda went to his house and they were given food, and they, at the end of eating, this so-called household sannyasi said, "Would you like some happiness?" And Lord Chaitanya, being really innocent, even though he's God, he didn't know what the guy meant. And Lord Nityananda, being a little bit more sophisticated than Lord Chaitanya, said, "He means liquor." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Get me the hell out of here." And they both jumped in the Ganges at that point, without even taking their clothes off or putting on a gumshoe or anything like that. So these are Kali Yuga Brahmins and Sannyasis. And therefore, you can't have Varnashram. Because the Brahmana is the visionary of society. He doesn't do, you know, the physical work, although he can teach. Brahmin can teach about anything. Brahmin can teach agriculture. Brahmin can teach fighting. There's nothing wrong with Dronacharya teaching martial arts. Nothing wrong with that. But using that teaching for his ulterior, personal, motivated desires, that's the problem. That makes him not a Brahmin. And also eating food in the kitchen of Duryodhana. That also lost him his Brahminical status. If a Brahmin eats impure food, then he loses his Brahminical status. Why? Because the mind becomes wicked. That's also explained by Prabhupada in regard to why Dronacharya, why Kripacharya, why Grandfather Bhishma did what they did. And their minds became contaminated. And actually in the Mahabharata, it even describes they became possessed by demons. They literally became possessed by demons because of non-Brahminical activities. You know, eating impure food. So, anyway, so once you have the brahmanas, then, and of course the kshatriyas have to listen to the brahmanas, and the kshatriyas will decide who is more qualified to be the king, even if the person who is the oldest son is not qualified, they will actually appoint the second son, or even someone who's not even a member of the dynasty, to become the king, the next king. The brahmanas were held in so high esteem in the Vedic society. So this would prevent, and so we need brahmanas in the Krishna consciousness movement, but actual brahmanas, not Kali Yuga brahmanas. And a brahmana is yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana, prati, graha, does sacrifice, does deity worship, teaches deity worship. And brahmana can also manage a temple, a small temple too, not a temple that has 5,000 people. That's not political activity, but a small ashram type of situation. Mm. Just like in North Carolina, our temple is growing, so I'm pretty much stepping out of the management. We have committees and everything like that, and then things are going on, because everyone has to know their own skill set and psychophysical nature. And we have to really know what we're good at, what we like to do, what our varna is. Okay. So these are some points. Any questions or comments about any of these points? Yeah.
In the history of, you could say European history, we hear kind of this rough description of how Parashuram annihilated
the Kshatriyas
26 times, 23 times.
Yeah.
And that they fled over and over again after these annihilations.
Yeah.
And that's who seeded, so to speak, Europe.
That's the European, that's us. Some of us.
So I never understood of that. What was happening in Bharatvarsha at the time by which he had repeatedly cleansed? What does it actually mean that
you're not? Well, he killed, as soon as their kids grew up, he killed the adults. He didn't kill any kids. They developed the same qualities as their fathers. So ultimately, to get good Kshatriyas, the arrangement was made that Brahmanas would have relationships with the Kshatriya women. Because the whole lineage had to be stop, basically, because the men had all these like demoniac qualities, like Kartavirya Arjuna, who was the original Kshatriya who was killed by Parashuram, and so they had demoniac qualities, so you had to eliminate that particular gene strain, and so it turned out that the only the Brahmin ladies were kind of nice, they didn't have the bad genes. I'm not the Brahmin ladies, I'm sorry, the Kshatriya ladies. And then the Brahmin men had relationships with them to have the breed some nice Kshatriyas. And the bad Kshatriyas, they ended up in Europe. And many of us who are descendants of those bad Kshatriyas. So we have some of their tendencies. Like political tendencies, you know, even I've seen in temples sometimes there's coup d'etats. Yeah, I was just like, well, many years ago I was a regional secretary for some temples in South America. So I get a call from a temple president one time. And he says, Maharaj, the devotees want me to resign and they have a gun on my head. What should I do? I said, oh, that's a no-brainer. Resign. So he resigns. I'm not going to tell the country. But, you know, I experienced this in many, many cases, that, you know, politics, dirty politics sometimes. So a Brahmin resolves things by, you know, discussing it person to person, you know, talking to someone, discussing it, spending time, talking. Brahmana does things with his mouth. That doesn't mean he bites people, but... you know, a Brahmin is able to do things, or if necessary, mantras. You know, we don't have too many powerful Brahminical mantra chanting people now. But that's a Brahmin, you know, he's not into threats. You know, a Brahmin will manage by explaining to people the benefit that they get from doing a particular service. Whereas sometimes the Kshatriya will threaten a little bit. You know, use the stick, argumentative Mahabharata. I mean, a Kshatriya has other techniques too. A Kshatriya can bribe someone. A Kshatriya can do divide and conquer. That's mentioned in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Hiranyakashipu's teachers, Sandhya and Lamarka, were attempting to teach Prahlad Maharaj how to be a politician. You know, Kshatriya has different means. Sweet words, a high position, you give someone a position, or you are in charge of the garden. Huh. And I remember working in South America one time, I said, we have to give everybody in the temple a position. Like, you're in charge of the bathroom. You're in charge of the book room. You're in charge of the garden. You know, you're the garden president. And everyone felt empowered by doing that. So, anyway, so Kshatriya. Brahmana deals with philosophy, encouragement like that, spiritual advancement. And the Vaishya deals with money, you know. Vaishya is interesting. Cow protection. You know, cow protection and trade. But it's also described that a real Vaishya really has a lot of hankering for wealth. Prabhupada describes that. And so all these tendencies have to be kept in check by the Brahmin. Because the Kshatriya is passion. A Vaishya is mixed passion and ignorance, and a Shudra is just ignorance. I mean, if you leave a Shudra alone, he'll sleep all the time. I mean, just like Prabhupada tells that funny story about how the king said he would feed any lazy man And to see who was actually a lazy man, he had all the so-called lazy men gather in one house. He set the house on fire, and only two men remained. And one man, he said, "I'm hot." The other one said, "Turn over." And King said, "These are genuine lazy men. We're going to feed them." So, you know, in society also, to a large extent, the welfare system we have in America, or in any country, encourages laziness. If the king actually wanted to discourage laziness and to make sure people were employed, what he would do, if someone said, "You know, I can't find a job, you know, can you support me?" Of course. Here's a hoe. Here's a shovel. Go out to the farm here. Go out to the Hare Krishna farm and talk to Tapu Purush. He'll give you something to do. And that way there'd be no shortage of food. No shortage of food. I mean, and people wouldn't be getting sick like they are. I mean, you see sometimes welfare people are getting sick and fat because they're just, you know, anyway. During the Depression, there was somewhat of that. There was, you know, CCC. Roosevelt had this, you know, and they built bridges and they did farming, and it really put America back on track by doing that. But right now we find a lot of laziness in America simply because a lot of people can get away with doing nothing. You know, there's crazy money, SSI. You know, if a person is genuinely disabled, really disabled, but how many people are genuinely disabled? I had one friend who was basically a quadriplegic and he was operating in an office. He was using his teeth to type. And that's a disabled person. And he was doing things, he was making money and, you know, working. So I'm not saying the work that he did was Krishna conscious, but at least he was contributing to society. So the government, I mean, you have to have people. So the Brahmins have to be guided by Shastras, not by sentiment. You know, what does Shastra say? And that's the Brahminical standard. Anyway, so society has many problems. Yes,
sometimes when we are doing devotional service, and if there is some conflicts or there is situations where there is tension or something, sometimes the devotee say, "I just wanted to come, do my service, and don't get involved. I don't want to argue, I don't want to fight. I just come, do what I have to do, and I run away." And I always remember one situation that Prabhu Rasaraj shared. He said that one time when Guru Maharaj was visiting, he went to the pujari. And he was walking, and he put his finger on top of a cabinet or something. And he saw glass, so he showed to Rasaraj Prabhu. He said, "Look, there." And Prabhu said, "I'm not in charge." And he said, "You are a Brahman. Therefore, yeah, you are in charge. You have to clean. You have to be sure that it is clean. It is clean. Doesn't matter that you have it with a title, a position.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the Brahmin has to make sure everything's clean. So, getting back to your original point, that if people see conflicts or something, then there should be some Brahmanas to help people resolve conflicts. I mean, conflicts aren't necessary, but they're just part of society. If you don't have conflicts, we're dead. I mean, it's obviously going to be different. We're human beings, we have individuality, we have differences of opinion about things. So we need Brahmins who, in a detached way, can resolve these differences of opinion or conflicts. You know, win-win. Instead of I win, you lose, or lose-lose, you get a win-win. Yeah.
Who puts
the checks and balances on the ground? Well, the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas also are twice born. And like Prabhupada said, We can allow people to practice their religion, but the administrative class has to make sure they're following their scriptures. You know, so if a Brahmin, I mean, it's easy to ascertain whether a Brahmin is actually following Brahminical activities. I mean, if you find a Brahmana taking intoxication, he's automatically disqualified from being a Brahmin. And you have to see shastrically. The Kshatriyas also have that right to say that someone is a Brahmin or someone is not a Brahmin. So that's the checks and balances with Brahmins. But it is a system of checks and balances. It's not, I mean, there are instances of Brahmanas being considered not, I mean, Arjuna, he was fighting with Dronacharya. And Krishna said, because Dronacharya was not, of course, Arjuna wasn't the ultimate person who killed Dronacharya. But Dronacharya lost his Brahminical status by acting as he did. Yes?
Very tapeless. Describing the build up to what Prabhupada gave us in Krishna book. The first chapter of Krishna book is describing the prayer as a moving, sad condition of the world. So he was drawing the information he was giving us from, I believe, the Mahabharata, and describing how at one point on the earth there was a need to cohabitate the Brahmins with the
Kshatriya ladies.
Ladies.
Which is what I said, yeah.
And that was going, it had launched a whole flourishing of like a Satya Yuga.
Mm-hmm.
But what changed all that was that the demons, the demigods, had this ferocious war going on in heavenly planets. And the demons were so thoroughly defeated that they took shelter in the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And took birth in Brahmin families and other species of life.
Yeah.
And that's where the Krishna book actually picks up. That's, that's where those prayers are. The reason those prayers are coming. So, not to point that into a question, but how come we never heard that before? I mean, is there a need to understand how that is unfolding so that...
Yeah, well, that was an interplanetary war. That's how Vrindavan Maharaj explains it. It was something like Star Wars and, you know, the death planet or something. Or was that in Star Wars called? I forget that. But anyway, the death planet. The dot what?
Darth Vader.
No, not Darth Vader. There was one planet called the Death Star. The Death Star. That was the name in Star Wars. So he was talking, I don't know if he specifically made that comparison, but it was an interplanetary war, and the demons took birth on Earth, and therefore that's why they all had to be killed. And one sense, during the Mahabharata war, in one sense, we find that Duryodhana was an incarnation, according to the Mahabharata, of a demigod. And he was actually Kali, the Kali Yuga demigod. And his business was to create this sort of quarrel whereby all these demons could be killed. So in one sense, Duryodhana wasn't actually a demon. He had this mission. And in one sense, Shukuni, it's described in the Mahabharata, was an incarnation of Dwarka. Dwarpara Yuga. So they both worked together to stir up trouble, so to arrange for everybody to be present in the battle of Kurukshetra so all the demanding activities could be killed.
So in the modern context, Prabhupada said that and are we to understand that those people then manipulate and work through political processes and economic
I don't want to get too much into the paranoid thing because Dwi Bhuj may be listening, but there, you can see that the economic interests in society, I mean, just on a practical basis, are manipulating everything. Like the United States political system, basically, it's manipulated by the economic interests. I mean, how much money do you have to raise to run for president of the United States? Billions of dollars. you have to raise. And then it by the propaganda or whatever. I mean, so I wouldn't say that they're like meeting on a regular basis and just like with their little horns on their heads. Because the problem with demons is they don't get along with each other either. They're not very good at coordinating things. At least Kali Yuga demons. I mean, maybe previously, you know, when you're talking about Ravana and Kumbhakarna and all those other nice guys, they could coordinate things nicely and run a kingdom. But I don't find the demons very much adept in Kali Yuga. But it is the business interests, especially in a democratic society or even in China, that are basically running the scene behind the scene. I would say that. But at the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very merciful. And even these people can become devotees. Vina hina yata chilo harinamu gurila. I don't like to see anyone as a dina. I just like to see people as prospective devotees. And there's some good qualities. I mean, even you have these big business leaders, like Bill Gates, for example. I mean, basically he's doing a lot of charity work, trying to help people. He took tons of prasadam when he was a kid. Steve Jobs also, who passed away and now is taking birth in the Hare Krishna movement. I don't know. I mean, don't quote me on that one. He said that he was able to survive when he was going to the university because he was eating at the prasadam. So, I mean, and devotees have gone on Sankirtan have gotten major donations from Bill Gates. You know, one time he gave like $1,000 to a devotee on Sankirtan. So to call these big business leaders demons, I mean, I have trouble doing that because they've done devotional service. And they're favorable to Krishna consciousness. So I think it's a mixed thing in Kali Yuga that, you know, and I think all of us have experienced this pretty much demoniac tendencies in our own hearts. We just have to, like, keep down. You know, just, like, keep it down. You know, don't let it show up, at least during Bhagavatam class, while I'm giving Bhagavatam class. You know, so I think isn't it? I mean, we all have these tendencies, just to be honest and introspective. So basically, we need to chant Hare Krishna is going to save the world. I'm not going to worry too much about conspiracy theories. I mean, you can spend your whole life worrying about these conspiracies and never get to the point of chanting nicely the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So I don't worry. The material world's a place of misery? Yep. That I agree with. And how it's miserable? That's Krishna's business. Whether it's a bunch of demons running it and causing me misery, or whether it's a bunch of mosquitoes biting me. Just like the other day, I stayed somewhere and I woke up in the morning with all these different welts on my body. You know, whether it was bed bugs, or someone said there's another type of bug called the no-see-ums. You know that? No-see-ums? That means they're so tiny, smaller than bed bugs, that you can't even detect. So they're, you know, I could say they're the demons. Whoever's causing me trouble, it's Krishna's arrangement. And it's not going to do me any good because I'm not going to, if there is a conspiracy, I'm not going to solve it. All I'm going to do is chant Hare Krishna and make people devotees. Yeah.
Maharaj, just before you ended the class and you said again question, you said that everyone should understand their particular skill set and what they're capable of.
Today I said that, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just that.
So how do we know what this contribution?
We'll seat you in front of a cloth that has Bhagavatams, gold, a hammer, and a pistol or a gun. And you crawl, whichever one you crawl to. That's your one. I'm speaking funny. Facetiously. No, it's very easy to understand. Whatever you can do for 8 hours a day without going crazy, that's your varna. Whatever you can do for 8 hours a day. I mean, I can do a lot of, I think I explained this in a previous visit, but I can do a lot of things. I know how to fix cars, I know how to fix computers, I know how to design buildings, I can do RT. I mean, I have a large skill set, but a lot of these things I couldn't do all day long without losing my mind. You know, if you ask me to fix a car, a tractor, Maharaj, he knows how to fix tractors. Wow, far out! Tapapunji would say, you know, can you see what's wrong with my tractor? You know, can you rebuild the cylinders? I can do it, yes, I know how to do it. But I'm not going to do it because it'll drive me crazy. Being under the tractor all day long, you know, doing all these things. It's just like, you know, it's not, my brain won't accommodate it. So therefore, I know that's not my varna. Because a Brahmin can do a lot of things. Like a Brahmin can know martial arts. A Brahmin should know how to farm. And sometimes a Brahmin can farm, too. That's actually allowed for Brahmins. And a Brahmin is not supposed to fight, but he's allowed to... If he doesn't have another way of making a living, a Brahmin can farm. That's allowed for Brahmin. There's certain duties that are allowed for Brahmin and not allowed for Brahmin. A Brahmin is not allowed to take employment from someone. Employment. Because then you have a boss, and then you can't really speak with peace of mind, you know, what you feel. So in other words, truthfulness becomes diminished. Like if the boss says, you know, would you like a cigarette? You can't say, that's disgusting. You have to keep your mouth shut. And you say, no thank you, not today. Just like one time I was circumambulating a temple and there was a bunch of Shaivites there and they're smoking ganja. And they said, oh, Maharaj, Mahaprasadam, would you like some? So I couldn't say, that's nonsense, because it would be an offense. I had to say, oh, today's a Tadashi, not today. But thank you very much. So, you know, so Brahma. Brahman has to be able to speak his mind, but satyapriya he tam, truthfully, pleasingly, beneficially. Yeah. So, any other questions?
I just want to make one comment. Steve Jobs, in an interview, said that the thing that changed my life was I was sitting in a class, and one of the points made in the class was that you should live each day as if it's your last day. This was your last day on earth, what would you do? And he said, that's how I directed it. And I did everything. So, kind of, where did he hear that?
Probably from devotees.
Probably from devotees.
That's true. Okay. Yeah?
In your surrender in Krishna consciousness, do you feel that your talents in any way were delayed?
Delayed?
Well, I mean,
until I'm about 90 years old.
Yeah. What you really want to do, what you can do 8 hours a day. In other words, did you X amount of years just in the name of surrender do other things?
Well, it's still happening today. It's not in the past. Don't use the past tense. You know, because, you know, just like the management service I have to do is not really my cup of whatever, you can't say tea in Krishna consciousness. My cup of nectar drink. But also, I want to please Prabhupada. So that just like I told the devotees about 5 years ago, I'm going to retire when I'm 65. So now I'm more than 65, of course. The devotee said, what happened? Why didn't we get rid of you? And I said, well, Prabhupada said to me, no way, Jose. Not in those words, of course. He said, no, you got to stick it out. This is my mission, and you're my servant. So here I am. Otherwise, according to my particular likes and dislikes, if I had to give into them, but this is a higher platform, I would just be like at Govardhan most of the year, chanting, becoming expert in Hindi and giving Hindi class, which I really want to do, but I have to find some time to do it. And, you know, that's what I would be doing, just traveling around, And when someone said something about management, I would just go Hare Krishna. I'd be like Prabhupada's godbrother, Krishnadas Babaji. You know, Prabhupada. And every time we would approach him with a problem, we'd go to him, oh, Babaji Maharaj, he'd go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He would never deal with any problems. He would just chant. So, but anyway, that's our, but that's devotion. Devotion sometimes supersedes, devotion supersedes different, you know, what we would like to do or what our propensity is like that. But one has to be very careful, otherwise you get completely fried out and frustrated if you're not able to have that much devotion. So you have to see, that's actually a higher principle in Varnashram. But one has to be careful about that. If you try to act on a higher platform than you're at, you can have a serious spiritual difficulty. So,
what? Are you supposed to be happy in Krishna consciousness?
I'm happy.
You're happy?
I'm happy because I'm pleasing Prabhupada. Oh, I think I'm pleasing Prabhupada. Yeah. But that's different. You see, in different stages of devotion, it's just different. You understand? I mean, that was actually a funny story. When I first joined the movement, Vidyananda Maharaj was temple president. He was trying to trick me to go on Sankirtan. So he tricked me to join. So he said, oh, you join the movement, you become the temple treasurer. So I thought, wow, that's great. So he sent me to the temple treasury. The temple treasury was just a closet. And there was roughly $5 in the temple treasury. So it took me about a half a second to count the money. And he says, oh, you're a good treasurer. You finished your treasury with, now go on to Sankirtan. I said, but I'm a treasurer. He said, no, the money's already counted. You want Sankirtan. I said, what, me? And he said, man, Sankirtan. And I had a good time on Sankirtan. So, you know, there's a certain amount as one advances in Krishna consciousness whereby one transcends. But that's this, I would say it's almost like an emergency situation. You know, and because like when Prabhupada first made Tamal Krishnamar's sannyasi, he removed him from the GBC. Did you know that? Because he said sannyasis can't be on the GBC. But when he saw he had no one else capable in India, he brought him back in the GBC. So Prabhupada was trying to institute Varnashram, but Prabhupada was also eminently practical person too. So we have to be practical, but we don't want to push people to such an extent that they're miserable. I'm happy because I can feel Krishna and Prabhupada are happy with me.
That's the main thing. You want to feel that Guru and Krishna are happy.
Yeah, but not everybody's on that platform. I'm not saying I'm at that platform. I'm happy because I'm eating nicely. But I get to eat nicely. Fruit and nuts in the morning. Anyways, but you have to see what platform someone is at. I mean, Prabhupada said the first duty of the manager is to make sure that everyone is jolly and has enough to eat. Jolly and eating sumptuously or nicely. Those are the first duties. So jolly is the main thing. If someone is not jolly, then, you know, you have to start to think of how to adjust their particular service. Like that. But obviously, you know, someone is, but even Arjuna, he stuck to his vana. Krishna said that you're going to be forced to act according to your nature. You know, even if you don't fight for me, you're going to be fighting for Maya, whatever. So, Varnashram is very important. Prabhupada did want it to establish, because unless we establish Varnashram, practically nobody will stay in the Krishna consciousness movement. Because how many people are on such a high platform? They're willing to do anything. It's very rare. You know, in the beginning days of the movement, we all thought we were pure devotees, right? Join the movement, Hare Krishna, I'm a pure devotee. I mean, I the first day I joined the movement, I thought it was a coward boy. I had read Krishna book and I said, well, that's my eternal nature. And me and the other brahmacharis looked at each other and said, yeah, we're all coward boys. You know, but as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you realize how little advanced you are. When you're not advanced, you think you're very advanced, and when you're very advanced, you think you're not advanced. Does that make sense? So, let's engage people according to their... Prabhupada said the business of the spiritual master is to engage people according to their psychophysical nature. Psychophysical nature. They ascertain what their nature is. And the way to ascertain is very easy. Just ask people what they like to do. Prabhupada, you can say that. You know, whatever you do, you can do it for Krishna. You know, if someone was a writer, or he engaged Sasrup Maharaj in typing and editing. Jagwet Maharaj is doing that. Jagwet Maharaj loves to edit. Sasrup Maharaj loves to write. So he engaged everybody according to their nature. You see the general way Prabhupada did that. And, yeah.
There's a room conversation in which Lloyd's, I believe it was Mother Lana, with the senior boards. And they were saying to Shri Prabhupada that these farms would be a place where people who could not make it to the city level would decline to be Brahmins and to go to the farm. And then other people would come who were not medically inclined, but by association, actually. Prabhupada said no. They just work. So the devotees repeated that as if the Prabhupada didn't quite understand what he meant. No, the Prabhupada like you chant 16 rounds and they'll follow the principles of the farm. Prabhupada, no. They just work. So in as we see the Taliban developing, it seems that there will always be a class of people to come and make an offer to service.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily going to be perfect.
Devotees, sadhakas.
Right, sadhakas. And so what happens is that the houses are not, how do you not mix but give them service, you know, it becomes a little complicated.
Well, you have to be like in Sri Rangam. Anyone's been to Sri Rangam here? If you go to the center section near the temple of the Brahmanas, the next section is the Kshatriyas, next section is the Vaishyas, next section is the Shudras. You live with people who have a similar nature. So, and that, but then everybody comes to the temple, you know, can come to the temple sometimes. And the Shudras just work. And they can also chant. Actually, there's different samskaras for different varnas too. For Shudras, the only samskara is the Vivaha Yajna. You know, getting married. And for the other, of course, there's also Antyashti, you know, the funeral ceremony. But for the other classes, there's different samskaras that they perform. And the three higher classes, you know, that's Varanashram. But yeah, we will have a differentiation of different varnas, ultimately here, if we want to organize things properly. There has to be an area where people who are not even devotees, so to speak, you know, shudras can just come and work at the fields. And they're given their necessities. Not salary, because then they'll just buy marijuana with it. But you give them clothes, you give them plenty of food, you give them entertainment, you know, Krishna conscious entertainment, and they're happy. But as soon as you give the shudras money, they just get drunk or smoke marijuana or do something stupid. Okay, I think we have to end because we have a program in New Orleans where you all came from.
Maharaj, you're giving the Sunday Feast lecture in the evening at New Orleans?
In New Orleans, yeah.
So then, could you please give the Sunday Feast lecture here and then go?
No, because I have a fundraising program at midday in New Orleans.
Oh.
There's a whole group of our members coming at 12. Otherwise, I would do that. And that's why I have to leave this morning for New Orleans to do that.